Hello and welcome to the Dorothy Project. My name's Alice and each week I get to know another woman like me who's found herself at home in gay male society. Today I'm talking to the actor Nicola Coughlan. Nicola plays Claire, the wee lesbian, in the global smash hit sitcom Derry Girls. In case you're wondering about her accent, she's actually from Galway in the Republic of Ireland. And if you haven't watched Derry Girls, you should, it's amazing. You can find it on Channel 4 in the UK and Netflix elsewhere. Off screen, Nicola is a massive Dorothy. She campaigned for marriage equality in both the Republic and in Northern Ireland. She's friends with Queer Eye's Jonathan Van Ness, and she's a huge fan of drag. So I can't have been the only one who noticed all the little rainbow pin badges.
Isn't that the cutest thing?
So sweet.
We were so excited. We have an amazing costume designer called Kathy Pryor. And I think it was like between her and Lisa, who's the creator of the show, and they sort of talked about it. And they're like, everyone has one, but they're like, but Claire gets two because she's the wee lesbian. So it's so cute, and it's just such a nice little touch.
Yeah.
And really touching that it's never directly referenced. It's just there. And Lisa said she wrote the character of Claire with like really rose-tinted glasses because she, you know, she doesn't necessarily think had Claire come out in 1995, or 94 was series one, in, you know, at that time, that it would have been like an amazing reaction. But she said she just wanted to write a really positive like story, and I'm really glad that she did.
Do you think that's so interesting? Because I think there seems to be like a movement towards this sort of like utopian, let's paint things how they should be.
Yeah.
And because that's so good to see. Like,
definitely.
I know, I don't know if you watch Schitt's Creek.
Yes.
But like, I'm obsessed with it, and I just think it's really lovely because Dan Levy, who made it, is just like, can we just show things how they should be? It's dead easy, and then everyone
completely
will just. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a funny mix because it's based on Lisa's own life, and this character is based on a real-life friend of Lisa's. But she's actually not gay. So there was a lot of things that really were her, and then she had to turn to her and go, actually, I was like, that's just, you know, that's from Lisa, that's not me. But yeah, I think, you know, representation is so important. And I've had so many messages from people that are like, we're just so glad to have. And I think people seemed really happy that Claire was this really girly character, and she wasn't, you know, they had no, there was never any push to make her any sort of a stereotype. She was a whole person. And I think it really pisses me off when I see that TV. She was like, oh, he's the gay one. I'm like, all right, do they not have any other qualities other than that? But Claire is like a fully rounded human being. And it's great to get that in a comedy too, because often, like, you read a lot of terrible comedy scripts and they're just like, yeah, this is the brain box. This one's the crazy one. But like in Derry Girls, it was so much there. It was amazing.
Yeah, and I think also like it was funny because I was thinking about it, and a lot of people when they're talking about kind of LGBT representation, it's like, oh, you know, coming out storylines are so tired. But yeah. I think something about Claire's, it felt really simple and really fresh. And
well, it was terrifying to do. Like I've said it so many times, but Saoirse and I just were really agonising over the scene. We'd only been filming the show a week, so we hadn't known each other that long. And we worried that we hadn't got the tone right because we were scared. We didn't want to make it seem like we were making fun of anyone's experience, but it still had to be funny. So it was a really scary line to tread. But I think Lisa wrote it so well, you know, because like they're two, and it shows that, you know, we can be such hypocrites as well. They're like, you know, with Erin being like, you know, I'm fighting for this sweet lesbian. And then when it turns out to be her best friend, she's like, but no, not you. I don't want you to be you. Like, you know, but I think it's very real in a way.
And how did you, like, prepare for it? Did you talk to people, or...?
Yeah, I mean, I have so many friends that I wanted to, you know, one of my friends, Beau, who lives, he's from Indiana, and I sort of said it to him, and I was really, yeah, really concerned that I didn't want to, yeah, make fun of the situation. I felt the weight of it. I really cared about getting it right, and I always say if it was a drama, I would have had such an easier time, because you just play it for the truth of the situation that's gone. But with comedy, it's like finding the moments that can be funny and knowing what isn't the funny bit. And but yeah, and Saoirse and I talked out a lot. Like, we stayed in her flat the night before and we kept running it. We had some terrible ideas for what we should do. We were like, what if we push one another? She's like, you know, go back in. She was going to push me, and then our director was like, that's the worst idea. But for some reason at the time we were like, yeah, this is going to be incredible.
The lost tape.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of those.
And obviously, like, at this moment as well with Northern Ireland,
yeah,
like, it's literally very recently the marriage equality has passed through the House of Commons.
Yeah.
And you've been a very vocal campaigner for that.
Well, I felt like, I mean, I did campaigning for Yes Equality in the Republic, where I'm from. And then I felt it very important, like playing a gay character on TV from Northern Ireland, I thought it would be really remiss of me not to kind of try to shine a light on what's going on there. And, you know, you do wonder sometimes, you're like, should I be, like, I'm not from there, so should I be, you know, I don't know what the word I'm trying to think of is, but, you know, like, I don't want it to seem like it's my thing, or, but all I'm trying to ever do really is if I can try and shine a spotlight on something. Because, I mean, we've been put in a real position of privilege with the show doing so well and people give us such love, but I don't want to take all that goodwill and not say, well, here's something back and I really appreciate it and I will try and stick up for you. So that's been important. But when it sort of passed the other day, I was sitting here and I was going, did that really just happen? I mean, it's not a done deal yet.
Yeah.
Sadly, but I mean, even for that to happen all in the space of, but part of it made me mad too, because I went, well, it was that easy for you.
Yeah.
So why were you making people suffer? I went and I visited this amazing charity called the Rainbow Project, who are based in Belfast. And they do such incredible work just supporting people in the community. And like they kind of say, like, it's, you know, Northern Ireland can be seen as quite a conservative place. And, you know, with the DUP and things like that, like they sort of said to me, we still feel like such second class citizens in our own country. But yeah, seeing the work they do and speaking to members of the trans community that are working there, and, you know, there's such like bullshit the trans community have to deal with at the minute. Like, it's just, it's this whole thing of like the media sort of giving attention to these shitheads. I'm just tired, so I'm just gonna be honest, because I can't think of them. Like, I just think pure shitheads that are inserting themselves into other people's business. And it's not even a thing that people are talking about, you know, like, yeah, in real life. It's not, yeah, something that we're going, what are we going to do about trans people? It's like, none of your fucking business. What are, yeah, you going to do? And
the thing that strikes me is, like, I was thinking about like Nadia winning Big Brother, like, what was that, like 15
right,
years ago?
Yeah.
And like, no one gave a shit.
No,
and
people don't.
It feels like it's something that's been really kind of confected out of nowhere.
It's wild,
scary.
To me. But like, and then yeah, there was a lovely girl called Alexa, and she was telling me that, you know, she's trans, and she was talking about how they were really worried about the, you know, their younger members, and, you know, because the rates of self-harm are so high. And so I've taken like a lot of flack from like TERFs on Twitter. Like, they really do not like me. Like, but I don't give a shit, because I'm like, you're just trying to deny someone's right to exist. So, you know, I don't really feel that great about you either. So that's absolutely fine. But how vocal and vitriolic they are, and how it's the levels of aggression. You know, I'm just someone standing in the silence saying, I'm supporting you. But if I was a member of the trans community, I can't imagine the pain of having to try and justify your existence to these people. It's not even their fucking business. But I think, like, more people who have, you know, a certain, are in the public eye, I think they should, like, just stand out and just say, look, we're here for you.
Yeah.
Because this is not the norm. This is not what people, especially, you know, people in our industry that are coming out and attacking them. I think it's really important. And then there's the rest of us saying, hang on, we do not feel, this is not representative. We are there for you. We support you. You know, I do feel like that stuff is important, because I'd want to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really would.
So I guess it's interesting, because like, I've spoken to quite a few people now, and it's like, so I don't know how you define yourself, whether you define as straight or...
I mean, it's a weird thing, because it's something I never really thought about. And sort of when I was, my biggest obsession as a kid was The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
So I like used to get up in the morning and put it on and just watch it and rewatch it and rewatch it. And then I always wanted to be like Dorothy. I wanted to be Bette Midler in Beaches. I wanted to be like, you know, basically any gay icon. I didn't know that as a kid, but I was like, that's something I want to be. Like, I wanted to be in like First Wives Club and all that stuff. I didn't want to be like a Disney princess at all. I just thought that seemed like, what's the thing? But I felt like I moved to San Francisco when I was 19, which is like, you know, the gayest place on earth. But I went there and sort of was like, I just felt very at home within that community. And then working at Lush, which is a really inclusive, like, lovely company to work for. And then I worked for Lush when I moved to London. So I just felt like more at home within like the queer community, I suppose. I was like, these feel like, and I said it to an ex-boyfriend, I was like, these are like my people. And he was like, you can't say that. And I went, no, I like can't explain it to you, but this feels like this is my tribe, like, completely, you know? So yeah, it's just this, like, it's just like, you can't, if you feel at home with people, you just do. And that's just the way it is, I guess.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. That's kind of what I'm trying to pin down, really.
Yeah.
That whole, I guess, like, what is this sensibility of like there are certain kind of camp icons.
Yeah.
And then you grow up and you get into your 20s and you're like, oh my God, these are gay icons. And everyone else, all of my mates were watching this stuff.
Yeah.
What took you to San Francisco?
It was funny. So there's this visa you can get. I think you really get it if you're not Irish. It's like a real Irish thing to do called the J1 visa. Which means you can go over to the States for the summer and work. So you get like it's like a 3-month work visa. And everyone was going to New York, to Long Island, and my best friend and I just decided, I don't really know what the thing was that took us, that we just decided to go there, and we just had the best time, and it was the first time I went to Pride was there. I mean, it was a bit of a baptism of fire, because it's like there's a lot of like public nudity. I think it mustn't be illegal there, because there was just a lot, but these are like old dudes on roller skates. Type.
Was it like the Folsom Fair type stuff? Like
no, not that, but I was actually working at it. Lush had a stand. It was right by the town hall. And yeah, just a lot of naked old rollerbladers. I was only 19. I was like, oh my God.
And was it that like, because I find it really interesting, the whole thing about kind of like straight people going into gay bars.
Yeah.
And the etiquette of that and stuff. So was it that you made kind of gay friends, or did you just, you and your mate kind of explore?
Definitely. I mean, I just always, like, it's funny because the friends I had at school that later turned out to be gay, I didn't know at school. I mean, I left school in 2004. But we were like quite naive, really, you know, because even like the time, like the only like representation of gay characters on TV was like the OC, and it was like Marissa and Alex, I think. But it wasn't like, I just didn't, and I remember someone saying to me in school, well, you know, it's like 1 in 5 people are gay or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, that means like, who could, like, no, that can't be right, you know. And then like, you know, meeting the people in college and they're going, yeah, I was obviously your gay friend. We sat and talked about the Eurovision all the time. I was like, oh yeah, of course.
Like Eurovision, like what is it about Eurovision?
Oh, and I was obsessed, yeah. And my friend and I, we used to like recreate the Eurovision. Like,
amazing.
Yeah, like the songs, the dances, and yeah, we just, oh my God, we loved it so much.
But like, you're friends with like Jonathan Van Ness now. Like, how did that come about?
I mean, the most ridiculous thing, so I was filming a show called Harlots at the time when Queer Eye came out, and then I like watched it and I was like, we're just on the same wavelength. I just know we're going to be friends. And I just feel this deeply in my soul. But then because when you travel to set, sometimes you're traveling for like an hour in the winter and it's very cold. And I was like, I really want like a cozy set jumper. So I was like, I really want one with his face on it. So I Googled it, could not find one. So I just got one made on like Redbubble and then put it on Instagram. And then he saw it. And he sent me a message. He was like screaming, crying. And he was like, oh my God, girl, I love you so much. And I was like, what? I love you too as well. And then we just kind of kept talking. And then I went to New York for my birthday in January, which for anyone who wants to be an actor, that's the first holiday I've afforded in my life at 32. So it's a long, hard road, kids. Yeah. But we went to New York and then we met up. I went to see my friend Anthony in the Harry Potter play.
Oh, amazing.
And yeah, Jonathan came and his lovely friend Sam Lansky too. And yeah, we went for dinner. He took us out for dinner. And
I guess it must be interesting because like the Queer Eye guys have had such a similar trajectory.
Yeah,
like
with Jonathan, I mean, we're the same age and we both kind of worked. Every job under the sun during my 20s. And he did the same. But I think it's actually a blessing, I think, for these things to happen when you're a little bit older, because you take it with a pinch of salt.
How did you get into drag?
God. So, I mean, the first drag queen I was ever into was RuPaul, because I was obsessed with the Brady Bunch movie.
Right.
And RuPaul played the guidance counselor, Mrs. Cummings. So,
Ru
has been in my life since I was like, yeah. I was like 11 years old. So, and then I knew about like Supermodel of the World, like that. I was like very aware of that as well. So yeah, it's been very, for a long time. But then I remember it was like 2013 is when I first saw Drag Race. But I was like,
that's quite early on, right? Like,
yeah, that was like, it was the first season I saw that was like happening live, as it were. It was like Bianca,
yeah,
Adore Courtney, like that series. And then I went back and watched all of it and I was like, oh my God, like this is my whole, everything that I've always wanted, like it's just perfect. And then I used to go to like the clubs, black, remember the Black Cap? And I used to go there. And the first queen I ever saw from Drag Race was Shangela.
No way, I saw Shangela at the Black Cap.
Oh
like
my god.
5 years ago. We were probably in the same room. Because it's only, really tiny.
Yeah, and she only did one performance, so we were definitely in the same room. How weird is that? Yeah. That's
she
so
did
weird.
Like because I've thought about that. I've driven like it's sadly shut now, and I've driven past it and been like,
"So sad."
I saw Shangela do a Beyonce medley.
That's what I saw.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so really weird.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, there we go.
Look at the world.
Yeah.
It's Oprah calls a full circle moment.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I saw Shangela. She's such an incredible performer. Yeah. She's not a trained dancer.
And I love that. For her full circle moment, she went from that because the stage was so tiny at the Black Cap, like literally you could take one step and fall off it.
Yeah.
And now she's done it in front of Beyonce.
So I saw like again, I was like another Oprah full circle. I was like so proud of Shangela.
Yeah,
I saw you do this so long ago in the tiny dingy foot. Yeah, it was
have
amazing.
You ever met her?
No, I haven't actually.
Have you met who's your favorites?
So I do love Jinx because I love I love Little Edie too. So when Jinx did Little Edie, that like just hit several parts of my brain that I was like, oh my god, like my sister and I have dressed up like Big and Little Edie.
Amazing.
So like
at what age were you?
Like 25. Like, yeah, I should have just totally lied. I'd be like, I think you were 12, it was adorable.
I don't know which would be more like
so she
unusual.
I was 21. She's like 8 years older than me, so but yeah, then we spent my childhood like remaking music videos, and so we always like dressed up together. And so yeah, Jinx, I love Jinx. I've seen her like loads of times. There's so many of them. But I did Crystal Maze with the other Derry girls. Like Louise and I are both huge Drag Race fans, and we've gotten Jamie Lee into it. Seriously, we're trying to like wean her in. Dylan's not a non-committal fan, but yeah, Louise and I are sort of the main two. But then we were like, how can we slip Vanjie into this? And this was pre like this new series. It was literally when Vanjie was that one ep Vanjie. So we got it. Eventually Vanjie saw it.
Amazing.
As well, which was incredible. And Sasha Velour. So when her series was airing, we were in Belfast filming the first series of Derry Girls. And I brought a load of Republic of Ireland crisps up north for the girls. And then I was like sat alone in my apartment, which was like left alone for too long. I will just end up doing something weird. But I put the bag of crisps in my head and I did like her so emotional.
You mean like the wig reveal with the petals?
Yeah, hang on, I'll find it. Oh, I knocked my mic off.
but with crisps.
With crisps. but then recently, it's like someone, because the Derry Girls fan accounts are like super active and they'll find stuff that I like don't even remember, you know, that's happened or whatever. And they reposted, so I reposted it and then she commented on it. She was like, oh my God, I love Derry Girls. I was like, what is this?
That's
what's
amazing.
Going on? I don't think I posted it that long ago. Oh, it's here.
Okay, so just to paint the picture, it was bags of crisps rather than individual crisps.
Oh, not individual crisps. No, not individual crisps. No, no, no.
Because like, that would have been A, a waste of crisps, and B, kind of devotion.
It would have felt even better than you said it. I'm like, of course, because it would have been like petals. And then, you know, I didn't want to eat the crisps.
Lovely, carby, salty petals.
Yeah, all over my couch.
So one thing I do ask everyone is, tell me about the first time you found yourself in like a queer space, like a gay bar.
Oh, so I wonder if it probably was in San Francisco. So it was 2006, and then like I loved going to the Castro, and I had one. Do you remember they became really fashionable? They were the hats that were covered in sequins.
Yes.
So I had a red sequin one, but this, and then I got really fucked off because about a year later, like Urban Outfitters got them, and then everyone had one, and I was like, this was my thing. And I remember a man just stopped me in the street in the Castro, and he was like, your hat is wonderful. You look wonderful. And it just like made my life. I was like, this is the most magical place in the world. But yeah, I just loved the Castro. And like, yeah, we went out to some of the clubs there, the names of which I could never remember now because it was so long ago. But yeah, probably then actually.
And have you found that, because one of the things I find really interesting is the like, sort of the context of it. So like, mm-hmm. if I'm out with a load of gay friends, then walking into a gay bar like feels A, I don't feel uncomfortable, and B, everyone around can see that like I'm with people.
Totally.
But sometimes, like, I was in New York recently and wanted to see some drag queens.
Yeah.
But I was on my own. So I was walking into Pieces, the gay bar, and I was like, is this, should I be here? Do you know what I mean?
I know it's a really weird one, that, because I've heard, you know, a gay guys talking about, you know, women being disrespectful and stuff and like hen parties. And I've like knowingly said, like, I'm like, I've never been like that. And I'm not sort of gonna, like, I'm not gonna go up and like grab someone. I had a really shit experience at, it's the place at Vauxhall Tavern in Clapham. Yeah.
The Vauxhall Tavern, yeah.
I had the shittest experience there. This was back Halloween 2016, and I fully dressed up as Alaska. Like, I made, like, a costume. Like, I spent some stupid amount of money on it. When I was very broke at the time, so I don't know what I was doing, spending my money on, like, bin bags and glitter, but, like, that is what I am wont to do. Whatever. And then went into the club, and they had a fancy dress contest, and I was, like, really gone home, and I was like, I want to enter in. They wouldn't let any women enter the competition. So here I am. I've got like two wigs on, a crown, like I did the full makeup, I glued my brows. Like,
you've got the nails.
Oh yeah, and like they were glued on to, like, it took me a really long time. But I was like, I was really fucked off by that. And I was like, you know, I'm someone like, I will fight for you. Like, I don't just pay lip service, I will do it. I literally put myself, and I felt, I was like, this is really shitty. And they were like, no women. And I was like, that's really fucking shit, man. And I tweeted them afterwards, and I was like, this isn't cool. This is not nice behavior. Like, I didn't come in and, like, you know, with a dick straw and start shouting at someone, like, you know. But yeah, that, so like, I think, and it's a difficult conversation to have, like, about misogyny in gay clubs. It's a difficult, because people go, well, you shouldn't even be there. And you go, okay, that's a very weird, not inclusive attitude.
I just want to, because you said Vauxhall Tavern in Clapham, so I just want to be sure whether it was like the Two Brewers in Clapham or the Vauxhall Tavern.
Oh shit, let me look it up, because it will be on my Instagram. Let me check,
just so it's clear.
Okay, let me see. It's the one on the High Street.
Yeah, I think so. Like, the RVT is the one on the like, just past that big bridge and junction by the river.
No, I think it was the Two Brewers, you know.
Okay.
Okay, let me see.
Still shit.
It was really shit. It made me really sad.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's kind of like, it's an art form. And even if it is mostly done by gay men, like, yeah, who is it for? And, like, I mean, it looked like an amazing Alaska costume, so.
But it took me so, like, I felt like such a sad, like, I was like, oh man, you really made me feel like a piece of shit. So yeah, that like hurt me. I was like, this really sucks.
And do you think, because like, obviously you were dressed up as a drag queen, so you could say you were doing drag.
Mm.
And, you know, what do you think about female drag queens, because there's been pushback about that as well.
See, that's a weird thing, and people don't want to think that that's misogyny as well, but it damn well is. It really is. And I'm like, why is this all about free expression and all this, but it's like, but women still can't? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think people like don't want to say that, but then I'm like, but then there's still, like, what's the point? It's like, we've pushed all these boundaries, but then that's enough. And I'm like, no, everything is gonna, you know, the only thing that you can count on is change. Everything's going to keep evolving, and, you know, we have to try and move with that. I think if you were, like, this real radical person in, like, the 70s, 80s, and you've reached a point now that you're going, you know, I just think that's wrong. I think, why, I'm like, why, yeah, I don't know. I don't.
Yeah. Did you get a reply from them?
From the No, bar. They totally ignored it. But it's funny because, as I said, I tweet exactly the same way as I did before Dairy Girls Anything came out, and, you know, it's totally different now, but I'm like, for then, you know, I was nothing to you. You had no respect for me. You, like, pretty much laughed in my face. And I left that night, and I was so upset, and I was like, I obviously, like, really have respect for this, the fact that, you know, I went and recreated this. And, like, people in the club were really nice, but it was the people that were, like, organizing it that I was like, you've been really shitty. You've been really, really shitty.
I think that's why as well. Have you ever been to Sink the Pink?
I've never been. It's something I see on everyone. It's Instagram stories, and I'm like, that looks amazing.
You should totally be a guest judge for Miss Sync Pink because they have like a runway.
Oh my god, I would love.
So good. I'm going to email them. But the reason I mention it was because, so Amy's one of the people who I've interviewed for this podcast, who is the co-founder.
Okay, okay.
And one of the interesting things that she said was that her and her best mate, Glyn, basically set it up because there were hardly any clubs where they could both go, her as a straight woman and him as a gay man, and both feel comfortable and at home and pull.
Yeah.
And I
think that's
really interesting in terms of like the way people kind of gatekeep their spaces.
But if I went in there and I was being a total asshole and really disrespectful, absolutely, but I never would be like that, ever. Mm. But yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I've seen that in everyone's Instagram. Everyone always looks amazing when they go. Also, I have a bag of stuff from Pride. So I was like, what am I going to use that again? So actually,
keep your stuff. The other kind of two questions that I ask everyone. So one would be, what is your favourite memory so far of your life as a Dorothy?
Oh my God. I mean, when the marriage referendum passed. Because I was really, really scared to go canvassing. I was terrified. And my sister and I did it together. And, like, but it just felt like the right thing to do. Because I think, and I'm totally guilty of it, but it's so easy to sit on Twitter and have an opinion. But it's, like, a lot harder to back it up. And I'm really, that's always, like, a really special memory to me of going door to door and speaking to people. And also made me question a lot of my prejudices, because we'd knock on a door and someone really, like an elderly man, would open it and I go, well, he's obviously going to do it. And then we met some of the most open, lovely people. I mean, we met people on the other side of us as well, but then it made me go, oh, I am have as much prejudice about this shit as, you know, you can so easily like distance yourself and go, well, I obviously am so woke and I like, I'm just, it's fine, because I would never. But then you're like, oh, I'm totally full of shit about that. So that was really special. I remember I was here. What was I doing an audition for? Oh, I was doing an audition for this play, which I don't want to reveal the ending, but it was an LGBTQ love story, which you didn't know at the beginning of the play. But that was the play that's got me my agent, which got me Dairy Girls.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and that play was very special to me. So I was at my second audition for that and I was here in London when it got passed. And I was like, I just remember like seeing it in the news and just like crying and crying. So I think maybe actually that was much, because I just thought, I'm really now proud of where I'm from. And I felt really sad for all my friends from the UK when Brexit happened, because I thought, you guys have the opposite feeling.
In terms of like the experience of canvassing in the referendum, like obviously that's quite a positive perspective that it kind of brought people together.
Oh yeah.
I know it's like the structure of Irish politics that it needed to be like a referendum, but I have heard from there and from Australia, you know, a lot of people saying actually that's really hard on LGBT people because it's kind of having
100%. And then I really felt it when the Repeal the Eighth campaign was happening, because I went, it was like the real, oh, this time it's personal type thing, because I was like, well, I'm a woman and, you know, I could be, like, I haven't been in that situation, but if I was, what would happen? And I, you know, and it was really, and then it made me go, oh, fuck, this is how hard it was. Like, I was kind of doing it, like, that thing of, like, I'll stand on the front line and I will take it, da-da-da-da. But then when she was on the other front, I went, oh, my God, because it's such a personal attack. And I, like, I do get a lot of shit on Twitter, but, like, I would rather stand up for what I believe is right. You know, I really, really would. But during that, I was doing the play at the Donmar, and I fell, like, ill. Like, I just looked grey in the face. I was, like, not sleeping well, not eating well, and our stage manager, this amazing lady called Sarah Alford Smith, she like took me aside and she was like, you are like doing too much. I'll generally, like, if I kind of reply to a shitty person on Twitter, it's because it makes me laugh, like that's most of the time. Because people are like, why don't you just ignore them? And then if I find it funny, then it's fine. But at that point, because it was so serious, it was like getting in at me.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Like the kind of solidarity as well.
It was insane. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Like, I have a friend, Davy Quinlivan, who's a friend of Holly's as well. It's funny because I'm like, it's such a small world that we're all connected. And I canvassed with his brother, John, John was the one who got us involved in campaigning. So, but like Davy was like, you had our back, we have yours. And it was incredible. And I remember reading this article years ago about the friendships between straight women and gay men, and how there's some of, like, scientifically, I think if I read the actual song, I'm going to like reference it terribly. But like it's one of the best, most healthy friendships you can have, because they're so, I don't know what it said, it was like so little, not expectation on both sides, but it's just a very, it's one of the purest forms of platonic friendship, you know?
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I need to actually, because it was so long ago that I read it, and I think about it all the time, but yeah. But it's just like, yeah, that, it's like such a special bond, you know?
Yeah, you're right, I think, and I'm trying, that's sort of what I'm trying to get to the bottom of, like, yeah. What is it? Like, what are these things kind of that draw people together?
But like you sense it was like that thing with Jonathan. I was like, we're just on the same wavelength. I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
this is me seeing someone I had no connection to in the wide world, like, but just sometimes you're just like, oh, we're the same tribe, you yeah. know. I'd even like sometimes like my references are very weird to some, like, I don't say normal people. Other people are like, why are you into that? Like, even I said to my friend the other day, like, I ordered a vintage, like, cabaret, like, movie poster for this flat. And she was like, why are you, like, an 80-year-old gay man? And I was like, I just am, and it's fine. Like, I just, like, that is very much how I... Yeah, sometimes straight dudes just don't know what to do with me. But it's like this, like, there's this amazing comedian called Catherine Cohen. Everyone who listens to this podcast should look her up. I went to see her in New York, and she's a friend of my friend Jack Rooks, and she's just like the funniest woman alive. Oh my God.
That might lead in my last question.
Yeah.
Always, who would you nominate for me to speak to?
Catherine Cohen. She's coming to Edinburgh Fringe. She's going to be in Dublin. She's going to be in, I think she's doing a show in London, but she does like musical theatre. She's got an amazing voice. She was on Late Night with Seth Meyers like last night, I just saw, but yeah, she is like, she is cut from the cloth of a gay icon, like, and she's just amazing. Like, she sings this line, and she's like, she sings, and then she goes, oh my God, I've got such an amazing voice.
Like, I think it's so interesting as well, like, the overlap between, like, I don't know, someone like that, or like a character like Moira Rose in Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
Like, so many drag queens have done that now, and there's this weird kind of thing where it's like, well, they're a woman, but they have such a draggy aesthetic.
I just adore that.
Yeah.
Actually, there's one thing, and I've told this story many, many times, but it has never felt more relevant than right now, in that people are always like, how do you know you wanted to be an actor? And basically, it was when my sister was in the school play. So it was, yeah, 8 years between us. So I was in primary school, she was in secondary. But then I think I'd been to the one the year before. So I was like, well, this is an event, so you must dress up for an event. So I had like, it was like 1992 or 3, and I went into my mum's wardrobe. I had a blue floral jumper on, like leggings, white socks, you know, trainers, whatever. And my mum had a black sequin dress waistcoat from the 60s. And I was like, this is it. This is what I need to go and see this incredible performance. Like, we were literally taken from the primary school, like, across the road into the secondary school, and my sister was like 14, 15, and looked out in the audience and saw like baby Liza Minnelli like waving at her like the queen. So yeah, that's been my vibe since day one.
Incredible. Look, I'm just saying, if the BBC make a second season of Drag Race UK and Nicola isn't a guest judge, I will riot. There was about 10 minutes I cut out just about Drag Race. I think it's really interesting that Nicola has been drawn to such camp pop culture since she was tiny, and that it's brought her into a whole world that she now advocates for so fiercely. To me, that's kind of the essence of a Dorothy, that you give back to a culture that's given you so much. But I'd love to hear your definition of a Dorothy, especially now that we're over halfway through the season and we've heard from such a range of women, from DJs to doctors. Tell me what you think on Twitter. We're at Dorothy_podcast, or leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Next week, I'll be talking to Amy Zing, who co-founded the clubbing collective Sink the Pink, which I mentioned earlier. With its inclusive vision of a space where queer and straight friends can party together in absolutely ridiculous costumes, Sink the Pink has had a huge impact on London's club scene over the last decade. And that impact is only getting wider now that Sink the Pink have gone mainstream, working with the likes of Sporty Spice and the BBC. We talk about all that and more on next week's episode, and Amy gives me my new favourite catchphrase. See you then.